day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the National Covering Kids and Families webinar. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require operator assistance, please press star then zero. As a reminder, this webinar is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Wesley Prater. You may begin.
Thanks, Latoya. Hi, everyone. I'm Wesley Prater with the Georgetown University Health Policy Institute's Center for Children and Families, and we thank you all for being here today with us for our National Covering Kids and Families Network webinar. We're really excited about today's topic of the potential impacts on enrollment, simplification, and coordination of children's coverage in this political environment. And this environment, as you all know, is probably a bit unlike anything we've ever seen. So we've got some great speakers today with us with a lot of information to discuss on the call. Information such as participation rates in Medicaid and CHIP, proposed Medicaid, CHIP, and exchange regulations, potential impact on outreach, simplification, and coordination of children's coverage, and also on the nation's process for dealing with the deficit and how that can impact children and families. So our first presenter is Jenny Kinney, who is a senior fellow and health economist at the Urban Institute, and she is really an expert on all things related to children's health insurance issues, and we'll discuss her most recent study on progress that states have made with enrolling children in Medicaid and CHIP. So I'm going to turn it over to Jenny Kinney now.
Thank you so much, Wesley. Really appreciate your guys pulling this together. As Wesley said, I am going to be sharing some new findings from joint work with Urban Institute colleagues who are listed on your screen, Victoria Lynch, Jenny Haley, Dean Resnick, and Mike Huntress, that was funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And this analysis uses data from the 2008 and 2009 American Community Survey. I know we just had new current population survey health insurance numbers come out today, and next week we'll have new American Community Survey numbers. I want to I want to emphasize that what we're talking about is what we observed happening in 08 and 09. And the focus of this paper is to track changes in Medicaid and CHIP eligibility for kids, in participation in Medicaid and CHIP, and in uninsurance. And as background, I think this group needs no background on the policy world, and since you guys are operating in it, but just to emphasize that the 2008-2009 was a pretty dynamic time period in terms of policy change and what was going on in the underlying economy. As you all know, CHIP was reauthorized in February of 2008, and as part of that reauthorization, there were a number of new initiatives in terms of policy, new policy options for states, and new funding aimed at trying to get more of the eligible children enrolled in both Medicaid and CHIP. At the same time, 2008-2009 was a time, and sadly we're still in a difficult time in terms of the underlying economy, but when the economic downturn was leading more kids to be eligible for public coverage and leading to a deterioration of employer-sponsored coverage, and so putting more demand or pressure on public programs to serve children. There is prior research on this topic, and that research has documented geographic, socioeconomic, and demographic variation in participation. And so part of our research interest was to assess the extent to which those patterns may be changing in important ways over time. And basically, the underlying impetus for the research is that it's really critical to monitor patterns and trends in participation and uninsurance among eligible children, since they constitute such a large share of all kids and a large share of eligible but uninsured children. If the nation's going to see progress reducing uninsurance among children, the public program role is likely to be a big contributing factor in that. So I want to talk briefly about the data on which this analysis rests. As I said, it's from the American Community Survey. Important to emphasize that the survey is fielded continuously over a 12-month period, and its real asset for analytic purposes is its sample size. In the public use file, there are 700,000 children included in the sample. And so that provides us with much more precise national estimates for smaller subgroups, say like Native American kids, and for more precise estimates for at the state level. And because of the way the survey is structured, it allows for analysis at the local level within states as well. Importantly, health insurance questions were just added in 2008 to the full sample, so that's why this analysis begins there. But from the point of view of monitoring CHIPRA and the Affordable Care Act going forward, I think it's really going to be a vital source of information as we move ahead. Just so you have a picture of what's on the American Community Survey in terms of content, picture the long form of the decennial census. It's really based on that, and it was actually it's fielded to provide census with better intercensal estimates of those different outcomes that are tracked on the long form. It doesn't have your standard health status measure that we're so used to working with, but it does have detailed information on activity limitations, which does give us some idea of the health needs of the population that are sampled. As I said, 2008, the survey began asking questions about health insurance coverage. The next slide shows the question as it appears on the mail-in survey, and 55% of this of the sample responds to this survey through mail, through checkbox type of approach. And I want to draw your attention, this survey approach to modeling health insurance coverage, very reminiscent of what the current population survey asks and how they ask the health insurance questions. I'll draw your attention to D, which is the question, the part of the question that gets at participation in or receipt of coverage from means-tested programs, and I'll flag that when census went out with this instrument with this formulation, many of us were concerned because, as you can see, there's no Medicaid-specific names, or there are no state-specific names for Medicaid, and there's no mention of CHIP specifically. And I'll come back to kind of that concern and how we're addressing it in a minute. So the next slide describes the fact that we're not using the raw data as they're released by census because all surveys or many surveys historically have had a problem of underreporting of Medicaid and CHIP. That's actually more pronounced in certain types of surveys than others, and we were particularly concerned about it in this survey, given the way the question was formulated. So my colleague Victoria Lynch developed a series of edits to the raw data that take into account other information provided on the survey and actually impute Medicaid and CHIP coverage to respondents where we think that they failed to report it, but they haven't. And we do the imputation based on input from a detailed eligibility simulation model that uses the state Medicaid and CHIP rules in every state to determine, according to the information provided on the survey, whether a given child is likely eligible for coverage. And just some more background on the methods. Participation rates are defined eligible kids participating in Medicaid and CHIP divided by eligible kids participating in Medicaid and CHIP plus eligible kids who are uninsured. We don't include privately insured eligible kids in the base. Given the fact that the Medicaid and CHIP programs are targeted on the uninsured, so we focus on how well they're closing the gap left by the existing private coverage for the eligibles. All the analysis that we've conducted take into account the complex sample design of the survey and develop appropriate standard errors for the estimates. Well, the next slide shows that the consequence of our edits. You'll see that the original unedited data have somewhere about 22 million kids covered by Medicaid and CHIP as reported, and our edits take that number up over 25 million and bring it very close to, not equal to, but close to the administrative total that we derive from available sources for the same time period. We have a number of reasons for thinking that the administrative total may overstate the number of kids on Medicaid and CHIP at a given point in time, but we certainly felt that the raw data were understating that. And the next slide will show the other reason that we feel like the edited data that we're using are stronger. And that's because they much more closely line up with the comparable statistics from the National Health Interview Survey in terms of the uninsured. We think that most experts working in the field feel like the National Health Interview Survey does the best job of measuring health insurance coverage of any survey that we field on a annual basis. And so we feel that the data nationally and for other subgroups that we're able to compare between the National Health Interview Survey and the ACS are very similar. And so we feel like the ACS coverage estimates that we're using are really going to withstand scrutiny, although I will say that we're doing a lot of methodological work to assess the validity of the edits that we're doing. And so as time goes on, we may learn some things that cause us to do things differently. But I think for right now, we're doing the best job we can using these new data. Well, let me turn to what we found. First, between 2008 and 2009, another 2.5 million children became eligible for Medicaid or CHIP. And that's due to the combination of the downturn in the economy, which placed more kids in the income bands that are eligible for Medicaid and CHIP. And it's due to the fact that a number of states, notwithstanding the recession they were facing, expanded eligibility for kids over that time frame. Despite the fact of having to solve a bigger problem, it really looks like participation among eligible kids increased. We're finding an increase of from a high base in 2008, I'll point out, of 82.1% up to 84.7% in 2008. And when we narrow in on the groups who are eligible in both years, under the assumption that the newly eligible kids, that there may be some lags in participation then, we see an even larger increase. It's not that much bigger, but it suggests that the increase in participation that we're seeing globally is driven by higher take-up among kids who have historically been eligible for such coverage. And we're not just finding that participation increased, we're also finding that the uninsured rate fell for kids over this time period, and particularly that it fell among the lower-income kids who are eligible for these programs. We found overall about a 340,000 decline in the number of kids eligible for Medicaid or CHIP who are uninsured but not enrolled, and the corresponding percent decline from 11.6% to 10.1%. So when we saw these findings, we were pretty surprised that during a recession you'd see this kind of progress. I think if you looked back at prior recessions, you wouldn't have seen this type of gain for kids. The next slide shows that the about half of the increase in eligibility, as far as we can measure it, was due to the economic downturn and the resulting decline in income, and about half was due to eligibility expansions. And from the next slide, you'll see the figures that correspond to the numbers on the prior slide that show the decline in the uninsured rate among eligibles and the decline in the number of eligible kids who are uninsured to 4.3 million. Subsequent slide shows how these patterns shook out for kids in different demographic and socioeconomic subgroups. So as you can see at the top, the overall decline was 2.7 percentage points. But I think what's striking is if you look in the last column, you see increases for each and every group that we looked at except for non-citizen kids. So we're seeing increases in participation for all three age groups that we look at for different types of households in terms of language, in terms of income, for children of different race and ethnicities, and for citizen kids both with and without citizen parents. And really, you know, I'll draw your attention to the particularly large increase, the 4.9 percentage point increase for the citizen kids living with non-citizen parents, which suggests some real progress for kids in mixed immigrant status families. And I think that's also picked up in the gains you see for the kids living in households where parents don't speak English above. But this chart really shows that the gains were broad-based and occurred for lots of different kinds of subgroups. The next slide shows how these patterns shook out across census regions. And in 2009, as in 2008, there's substantial variation in participation across census regions, but you see that every region had a statistically significant increase in participation between 2008 and 2009. So the gains were not exclusive to one region or found in all but one region. They were found in every region. And the differential across regions appears to have narrowed over that time frame, but still point out that participation in New England and the Midwest is higher than in the other two regions. The next slide shows how the participation rates changed at the state level. And I mean, the first thing to emphasize is from the map, you can see all the dark green. Those are the areas where there was no statistical change in participation. And the light green are all the states that had a statistically significant increase in participation. And you can see that over half the states had a statistically significant increase in participation. And you can see that those states are spread across the country. It's interesting that there was less progress in the upper Midwest as in terms of a pattern, but I think the progress in the South and West and when you look more carefully at the state level, you see that some of the states that had the lowest participations in 2008 had higher increases, and that's partly because they have more room to improve. But I think that's partly a reflection of kind of a narrowing of the distribution across states. The next slide makes the point that despite this progress and the decline in the number of kids who are eligible but uninsured, we're still in a situation of having the majority, about two-thirds, of uninsured kids who are, of all uninsured kids, being eligible for Medicaid or CHIP but not enrolled. Now, most of these kids have incomes below 133% of the federal poverty level. The kids who are not eligible for either program, those uninsured kids are either higher income, you know, their incomes are above the income threshold for Medicaid and CHIP, or they're undocumented kids, or certain groups of legal immigrant kids who can't qualify despite meeting the income requirements. The next slide shows, just makes the point that these 4.3 million kids, uninsured kids, are heavily concentrated in 10 of the larger states in the country, and that three states account for 40% of all the eligible but uninsured kids nationally, Texas, California, and Florida. So when you think about leveraging policy changes, policies that successfully increase participation in those three states and in the other seven that have a large share of the uninsured nationally are going to translate into much bigger gains on the national level. So really speaks to targeting policy change. And the next slide really reflects kind of a simple set of what-ifs. The 4.3 million eligible but uninsured in the far left column reflects our situation today. And then subsequent columns reflect different participation rates prevailing across the country. The first column just says, what if all the states achieved at least the national rate for participation, or if they're higher than that, they stay higher than that. And then the next column reflects 90% participation in all states or above, and the last 95% participation in all states or above. And you see, I think this really clearly shows what it's going to take to move that eligible but uninsured number substantially. With 95% participation, we still are going to have some eligible but uninsured kids nationally, about 1.4 million, but that's substantially less than what we have today. And, of course, that base is fluctuating all the time and very dependent on what's happening in the underlying economy with respect to employer coverage and income. But this just takes a snapshot of today and shows what we could achieve through higher participation nationally and across the country. Well, let me just close by bringing out a couple of related findings on other research we're doing on this topic that we might want to be talking about at some point in the future. One question that always comes up, given the variation in participation rates across states, is how much of that can be accounted for by differences in the target population that states are facing in their Medicaid and CHIP programs. And our preliminary findings suggest that the underlying differences in the demographic and socioeconomic characteristics of eligibles is not the primary determinant of state variation in participation rates, which suggests that there are policy factors that are critical, that vary from state to state, and perhaps cultural and other kinds of factors that affect sort of the perception of public programs and interest in enrolling. I also want to emphasize that while I focused on regional and state-level participation rates, we've also been doing some work to look at variation participation rates within states, and I've just pulled out examples from two large states to give a flavor of the extent of variation within a state. So I think there's probably a lot to be learned from the within-state variation that could help us better target our outreach and enrollment efforts and maybe understand, you know, what those, what's driving those differences within a state. And that could really, I think, may be a really important investment we need to be making. And then while this talk is focused on kids, you know, the ACA is going to bring millions of additional adults into eligibility for Medicaid. And so it's really important, I think, for us to understand what the baseline participation rates look like for adults. We haven't focused as much on that as a research community. And not surprisingly, the analysis we're doing on adults suggests that the participation rates for adults are systematically lower than those for kids. And all the policy folks who are on the phone know well, probably from their own states and then from the national perspective, that there's been much less focus and policy attention on increasing participation among adults. And there are more enrollment barriers for adults, so I think that's going to be something else we're going to want to really pursue. I'm going to quickly mention limitations. Just as a research nerd, I have to say, despite our best efforts, our coverage estimates may have measurement error, our eligibility simulation may have measurement error, and in particular, they're, despite the very large national sample size, the sample available for some of the smallest states, while much bigger than for the current population survey, is still rather small, and so that there's more volatility in some estimates than in others. And I'll close by saying I'm interested to hear kind of reactions and how people think this kind of data could be better used to develop more effective strategies to increase public coverage. And to again emphasize the critical role that some of those large states are going to play in affecting the story at the national level. And then just to say that I think we need to be using both administrative data, which can give us more real-time enrollment information and information on whether retention is the issue or it's enrollment is what's lagging, and household survey data that really can tell us how well programs are doing at meeting different needs of different eligible subgroups. So with that, I'm going to close.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Jenny, for that information. Now we're going to just try to take a few minutes and open this up for some questions. LaToya, can you tell everybody how to queue up for the questions?
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then one. Our first question is from Barbara Munaz of Voices of Utah. Your line is open.
Hi. I just was wondering, we actually used this report that was published in a meeting that we had a couple of weeks ago with some state administrators, and Utah, of course, while not quite as poor in the participation rate as Nevada, we're still third from the bottom. What I'm wondering is, because we were trying to come up with a response letter to this meeting that we attended to give them not just a percentage of going from, in our state, the percentage of participation is 76.1, not just that we would like to get to the national average, but what that number actually is.
Yeah, so are you asking what you care about is what's happening to the eligible but uninsured number?
Correct.
Okay. Tricia Brooks is already on my case about this. So what's your time frame? I mean, it's what's hard about that is at the national level, I felt like we really got underneath it. We understood how eligibility was changing. And in each state, I don't think we've got the resources or time to do that. Mm-hmm. So I of course, I put these numbers together, and I've been vacillating between just putting out a chart that everybody could use and that would perhaps use the 2 years of data together, because the standard errors on the point estimate for many of the states is kind of large.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'd love to hear feedback about, I know the ideal would be to get great annual data and estimates of change and to have a storyline for each and every state, but let's say we're not in that world. Is it much less useful to you to have the 2 years combined together? And how important is it for you to have the change as opposed to the point estimate of how large, you know, the magnitude of the estimate?
I think in our case, and I don't know if other people experience this, anytime we talk about percentage rates of participation, at least the folks that we work with always want to know what that number looks like. In other words, if 76.1% of eligible but uninsured, or 76.1% of kids that are eligible are participating, what is that number? In other words, how many tens of thousands of kids is that? And if we wanted to get to that 84.8 national average, how many additional kids would we have to enroll?
Oh, so that's a different story.
That's the only question I'm really asking is how to actually get that physical number more than instead of just using that percentage. Does that make more sense?
So your question is, if Utah were to go to the national average, what kind of change would they need to see in their Medicaid CHIP enrollment?
Right. How many kids is that and what does that cost is basically what it always comes down to. So.
Okay. Let me noodle on that.
Okay.
And I know, Wesley, you guys can make sure that folks can get in touch with me directly.
Definitely.
Okay. Because I'd be glad to try to help think that through.
That would be great. Thank you.
Okay. We might have time for one more question.
Yes, our next question is from Suzanne Shupe of California Coverage and Hill. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Susie Shupe with California Coverage and Health Initiatives. First of all, thank you so much for this amazing research. And what I'm interested in, well, I'm interested in it all, but specifically on the slide where it was very interesting to see in California the difference in participation rates and how broad that difference is, and for groups like ours that, you know, do targeted outreach and enrollment, it's really useful for us to understand where those areas are where we can be targeting our work. So can you explain what a PUMA is, and can you tell us where we can go to get that more kind of local information about where participation rates are low?
Okay, I'd be glad to do both. The first is the so-called PUMA stands for Public Use Micro Data Area. It's the smallest geographic area that Census has identified that where you can put out annual estimates on the public use file from the American Community Survey, and they are mutually exclusive areas that cover the entire population of the United States. And they work off of counties, but for large counties, there can be multiple PUMAs within a county. And for counties that are low in terms of population, multiple counties can be in a single PUMA. But PUMAs beyond that don't cross county lines. So they're something that Census worked on with officials at the state level, not for the purpose of defining a geographic unit for the purposes of tracking health insurance coverage, but on a more fundamental level, these are supposed to represent areas that have some integrity about them. So we have put together for a couple of the large states participation rates at this level, combining 2 years together. I don't feel comfortable with the PUMA estimates for the single year because despite the large sample size, you're really getting, you know, especially when you're just looking at eligible kids, you're really defining the denominator in a way that gets pretty small. But I think we've done California, and I'd be glad to share those with you.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks a lot for sharing that information with us, Jenny. Obviously, this is very important information and very helpful to the states. Now I'm going to turn it over to Tricia Brooks, and she's an assistant professor at Georgetown University's Health Policy Institute and senior fellow at Georgetown University Health Policy Institute Center for Children and Families. And she's going to be delving into the details on how the proposed Medicaid and exchange regulations can impact simplification and coordination with Medicaid and CHIP. So, Tricia, you can take it over.
Thanks, Wesley. And Jenny, thanks so much for joining us today. I think people will remember that last year this data came out, and it was the first time we had really good, solid data on participation. And I think most importantly, seeing an improvement in participation rates broadly exemplifies all the great work that coalitions and groups in the states at the community level have been doing on outreach, simplification, and coordination. Many of us had been at this for more than a decade and a half, and it's really nice to be able to see measurable results from one year to the next. So let's jump into the next slide and talk a little bit about how we're going to continue to transform the system so that it works better. And what it was really exciting for me in seeing this latest set of proposed rules from the federal government on changes that are coming in Medicaid and CHIP to coordinate and align better with the new opportunities in health reform to cover kids under exchanges. It was really exciting to see that what they have done is to take many of the best practices going on in the states and use that to propel states forward and to accelerate the pace of adopting consumer